It's Wednesday, May 23rd, 2007, and you're listening to episode 53 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 55 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and on the mics with me today is John.
Hey.
Adam.
Hey.
And Mike.
Good evening.
Okay, we talked about how we are recording these episodes about 10 days in advance, and that means all of our up-to-the-minute news on FAST and TSR is going to be a little bit slower than it was before.
God, have you seen that D6 Star Wars book that just came out?
And along those lines, we've got some news that is a little bit behind the times. It's about a week old. But it is happening as of today that we are recording, which is the end of the donation drive for ZigguratCon. And let's talk about that. First of all, you guys did great. Between the money that was donated, the books that were sent in, and some money that we put up ourselves, we collected all total right around $1,000.
Ten boxes of crap. It was wonderful. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
And we put together kits like we were talking about before. Each one was a Fear the Boot tote bag. In there was the core rules to play a game, and that may have been one book or three books, depending on the game. Dice, paper, character sheets, pencils, everything you need to play this role-playing game. There's nothing else you'd need outside of this bag. And we also had some cameras someone donated. Some extra cameras.
Of like you can take at the con or whatever and send us pictures so we can post them online. It's a pretty good idea.
We included a letter with each one of these bags that said, send us in some emails and let us know about how the con went. And one of the listeners sent in an email to us saying, hey, I'm going to send some cameras with hopes that these guys will take pictures of the con and send them back to us. So there were some disposable cameras included with them. Carla, my wife, was nice enough to donate a bracelet that she said if she was to sell in the open market, would be worth over $100.
That's cool.
And it's a bracelet made of camo beads on sterling silver with some crystals on it. Looks really nice. Great kits. We got 10 of these kits total. Mike and I shipped them off today. Shipping was an unmitigated nightmare.
Tell us about this nightmare.
I assume that it was going to cost maybe about $10 a box to ship these. Mike calls me, I'm at work, and he's like, they want $36 a pop to ship these.
Wow.
Well, I made an error. Well, the post office lady made an error.
So I'm doing the head math at $10 a box. This is almost $400 in shipping.
Perfect.
Which is way above and beyond what we ever budgeted.
We budgeted like $100.
So in a total panic, I hop in my car, drive down to the post office to meet him, figuring, well, I'm going to have to max out a credit card or something. Get down there, realize what had happened is Mike walked up to the counter and said, how much to ship a box to Iraq?
Well, that's not quite what I said, but yeah.
And they told him $36. What Mike did not say is how much to ship a box to an APO, which is about $10 or $12 a box.
They didn't run the address. They just heard me say Iraq, and so they ran the numbers, and it came up
for
with 36.
For the acronym illiterate, an APO, question mark?
Is a Armed Forces Post Office or something to that effect. Gotcha. It's an APO is a military address.
Easier to get to than a house address in Karbala, either way.
Yeah, that's exactly. Right. Okay. Exactly. For example, if you're sending something to the military, they have a zip code that is specific to the military. They even have states like AE is the American operation or the American Theater in Europe or something like that.
Yeah.
That is the imaginary state.
I see that drop-down menus for like game registration sometimes.
Right. This is the imaginary state
that's what
you're
that
mailing
is.
To.
Yeah.
So it's a whole lot cheaper. So Mike and I ended up spending about, he spent about 2 hours there. I spent about 1 hour there in the post office trying to figure out pricing, filling out stacks of customs forms. It was an absolute nightmare. But the good news is we sent off a ton of stuff.
We had a good deal, actually. I have to give some props out to the fantasy shop because they gave us the employee discount when they heard what we were doing at one of the fantasy shops. So
that's
we actually
nice.
Got to stretch our dollar a little bit farther than it would have gone otherwise. So we got some extra gear, threw it in the boxes, and sent it off. So it was a good deal.
And the games we sent included the ones you guys sent us, which were games like Mongoose, Munchkin, D&D. We also picked up some ones, and we based our game selection off of the events they had listed, not our personal taste. So
no Battletech stuff got shipped off?
There was a Shadowrun 4th edition, though.
There was a Shadowrun 4th edition. There was a Rift's Ultimate book.
These men and women defend our constitution.
There were three sets of D&D, though, you'll be happy
okay,
to
that's
know.
Fine.
With Players' Handbooks, DMGs, and Monster Manuals.
We had some Call of Cthulhu. We had, what else was in there, Mike?
There was a World of Darkness book with the vampire.
World of Darkness and Vampire. So if you guys
Star Wars D20.
I will link, I'm going to post on the forums a complete list of everything that was sent. And if you guys look in the show notes for this show, I will post a link to that forum thread. So you guys can go and see the details of exactly what was in each of these 10 kits. It was a ton of stuff. So great.
We even have pictures.
Yeah, we have pictures of the kits. So you can see for real, we did really send the stuff. We didn't just pocket your money and run.
No, we just bought ourselves a whole bunch of new gaming books.
Yep. Gaming library for Mike. Woohoo.
We expanded our gaming library, bought a few strippers, and that was pretty much the end of it.
Not their services. Them.
Yeah, we own them. Please don't tell the UN. Trafficking in humans, I believe, is illegal in pretty much every state but Missouri. So well, if we get extradited, we're screwed.
You know that Kansas-Nebraska Act?
So anyway, if you guys want to stop by and check that out, great job to everyone. Whether you support the war or not, the point is that these were fellow gamers in need, and you guys did an absolutely A-plus excellent job of coming through for them. So good job to everyone. And Mike, big thanks to you for helping me do all the shopping and boxing and shipping and that absolute nightmare. Gen Con. Gen Con's coming up in August. August is going to be the weekend of the 17th through the 19th. And I believe it actually starts on this Thursday night, the 16th, but you get my drift on the weekend. And I wanted to let you guys know about an event. We are actually going to be there for more than 20 minutes, and we will spend those 20 minutes somewhere other than eating strawberry donuts and smoky bones down the road. We will actually be in the con this year.
Wait, can we still do that?
Yes, we can. I love those strawberry donuts.
We will have increments of 20 minutes, more than we know what to do with.
Yeah, so if you want to like waylay us somewhere, hang out in the smoky bones down the road. We'll be there for donuts at some point. But anyway, also, Saturday on August 18th at 7 o'clock p.m., this is a tentative schedule. I believe this will stick, but watch your Gen Con flyers. It may change. So Saturday, August 18th, 7 o'clock p.m. to 9 o'clock p.m., there is going to be a podcast reception where all of the gaming podcasts are going to be there, which includes Fear the Boot, includes Pulp Gamer. I believe Paul Tevis of that show is putting on he's sponsoring the event. I think DLI is going to be there. All your gaming podcasts, I'd list them all, but it'd be the next 20 minutes, are going to be there. So if you want to come out and meet us, or you want to come out and meet the guys from Accidental Survivor, or meet the guys from any one of these great shows, be sure to set aside some time Saturday night at Gen Con to come down and shake our hands and talk to us for a while, because we're going to be there. We talked to some of you guys through the forums or email, but we would love to meet all of you guys, including those we've never talked to before, face to face. And if everything goes right, it's not going to be anything big, but we may even have a little bit of swag to hand out. So stop by and say hi if you get a chance.
Come early, because I'll be face down by 9.
Yep.
Please, you'll be face down by 7:30.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It may be harder at Gen Con, because at Archon, the local con, the press pass got us in the front of the beer line.
Oh, that was so awesome.
But at Gen Con, I don't think there is a beer line.
There isn't a beer line.
And even if there is, we can't get in front of it. So yeah, we're the big dogs locally, but when we get on the national stage, we're not all that important anymore.
We're not really important on the local stage.
We are.
Yes, we are. Oh, we are. You know,
press pass makes us feel important, and we are. But
it was our endorsement that got the current mayor of St. Louis elected.
Right. Fear the Boot is actually a political entity.
Actually, the one candidate we did sponsor didn't win.
No, he didn't.
No,
Colonel Jack Jackson. Colonel Jack Jackson.
This must have been before my tenure.
It was.
It was,
yes.
Beautiful,
it was,
man.
The birth of Fear the Boot.
It's a name that has testicles.
Wow.
Man drives like a maniac.
Oh, yeah. It's all if he was a Harrier pile or something back in Vietnam, and all of his campaign pictures had him with a jet.
Killing things.
This man kills communists with nothing more than his love for America.
And he destroyed Cambodia
red,
with a
red, white,
mine.
And blue hearts just shoot out of him.
Out of his eyes. Getting back to Fear the Boot things, other than our political jokes. The state of the guilds.
What guilds?
Yeah,
precisely.
Probably give an update on the state of our MMO guild.
Do not transfer to WoW thinking you're going to join the Fear the Boot guild.
Do not transfer to Black Hand.
Yeah.
Save yourself $25 unless you really want to play with Chad.
Our guild went belly up.
The Fear the Boot WoW guild suffered an untimely death, really related to two things. One was a couple of the hosts, namely Adam and I,
yes,
just got burnt out on the game and were kind of disappointed. And by kind of, I mean extremely. With the direction they chose to take Burning Crusade as an expansion for WoW.
Oh, Mike's there with you. Oh,
okay. Well, pretty much they do what we, they did rather, what we speak against with role-playing games. They took the game up instead of out. We got kind of burnt out and left, and coincidentally or not coincidentally, about that time, just participation in general from what was once an extremely active guild, I mean, 20 or 30 people on at once, just nosedived straight down. From there, the guild kind of went under, and Chad eventually said, okay, that's it. There's nobody really here anymore, and just went ahead and signed the divorce papers and disbanded the guild. We have also an EverQuest 2 guild, but to be honest, we've had some problems drumming up interest for it. Adam wants to play it, but his computer doesn't quite handle it.
Yes,
and it's EverQuest 2.
I have been just far too busy to play it, so I don't know that that guild's going to survive either. It's still there right now, but unless a great miracle happens there...
But there is a shining light on the horizon.
There is a shining light on the horizon.
And it which shines brightly.
Possibly.
Oily.
The problem with MMOs is that during the development phase, every company out there promises the sun, moon, and stars. And then when the game actually releases...
Yeah, that's right.
Those promises, you can't find those documents anymore.
Instead of the sun, moon, and stars, you get the dirt, poo, and vomit. And... That's we have an MMO that we have our eyes on that at this point we are very excited about because it contains everything that pretty much all of us would want, and all of us, I mean the hosts, would want out of an MMO, which is the Conan one that's set for release, I believe, in October fall. Of this year, sometime.
Is it really that
year.
Soon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, they just started the open beta. Oh, really?
And
yeah. I thought it was like a year farther.
I need to sign up for the beta.
Yeah, I'm not going to turn...
I don't know if it's open, but...
I'm not going to turn this into a commercial for Conan for a couple of reasons.
Because none of us have played it?
One, none of us have played it, too.
I haven't even looked at the website yet. I've only heard about it.
Secondly, like I said, they promise you a lot and then don't deliver a lot. And third, we're not in the habit of making commercials on this show anyway. But as it stands right now, we may be all taking kind of a hiatus from MMOs. But there's a very good chance that a Fear the Boot guild will start up in Conan. If you're curious about the game, go out and read up on it. If they deliver what they promise, ha ha, they actually are going to take this game in some kind of new directions. Yeah, so
we need Fort the Boot.
Yes, we are going to create Fort Boot because they actually allow you to build your own fortresses in that game.
So, they claim to allow us to build our own fortresses.
Like Shadowbane. Like, you know what happens when a game title starts with Shadow?
Or it's like in World of Warcraft, all those siege weapons and hero classes and guild housing that we are currently enjoying.
Yeah.
And by currently enjoying, I mean not enjoying unless we're in some kind of hallucinogenic state.
Asheron's Call 2, they promised all those cities we personally develop and everything. All the failed promises, I'm tired of the liars.
There's cannons and ballistas and stuff in WoW.
Yeah, they just
sitting
don't
there
can't do anything.
As static environment.
There are background environment objects that slow down the game a little tiny bit on your graphics card and don't serve any other purpose.
I urinate on them occasionally, but that's
all right. Let's move past this
slash
topic.
P. Okay, moving past the announcements, let's get down in some better subject matter. Have an email question that we want to tackle. Only email question we're going to tackle this time.
Oh, good, because last episode was entirely email questions.
I know, and I certainly am very glad when people send us some topic ideas because. First of all, I just love having the fans involved in the show in general. And secondly, it helps us think of things we might have otherwise missed. And here was a subject that at first blush, we didn't think there was anything to discuss. But the more that we, or at least I rolled it around in my head, the more I realized there may be something here to talk about, which is the subject of sports. And by sports, I don't mean Blood Bowl or Solaris 7. I mean like football and baseball and basketball.
Football!
What's a football?
Stickball.
The question is, are these curse words in geek culture?
Well, yes, they are.
No, they're not necessarily.
See, whoa. Well, are we talking perception or are we talking reality?
Yeah, I'm talking reality.
Here's the question. The stereotype is that gaming geeks or geeks of any kind, okay?
We're all fat. We're all lazy. None of us can play sports.
Well, and
we
more
do nothing but sit around and play role-playing games.
That's
and read
not
sci-fi
the stereotype
anime.
He's going
I'm lazy
for.
And can't
no,
play
that,
sports.
That's not the stereotype I'm going for. It's the stereotype, not that geeks don't play sports or aren't physically active enough.
It's that geeks hate sports.
It's that geeks hate sports.
Oh, man, I wish Chad was here, because he would have just vetoed that topic right off the bat with a, sports? What do we need to talk about sports for? I mean, this is a role-playing podcast. There's no tie to sports there.
I know there are people in my life who just flat out hate sports. And that's fine. They have their reason. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing in life that you have to like or have to hate. And so that's perfectly fine.
I think there's a couple things.
Well, but right. But we're not talking about those right now. But with sports, honestly, thinking through all the gaming geeks I know, I can think of exceedingly few. I mean, by far the minority who just absolutely have this unmitigated hatred of sports.
Yeah, I was on a volleyball team until a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, Mike's on a volleyball team. I enjoy football because I like the strategic aspect of it. Because
I like football for
I reason. Like the fact that they plan out strategies and such. It's not, you know, just kind of this one person leads the way sort of game.
We're kicking off the yearly mud party I have here in St. Louis with a Cardinals game. And enthusiastically so. I mean, we can't wait.
Well, St. Louis is definitely a baseball town, so everybody in this room probably likes baseball at least a little bit.
Yeah,
I love baseball. Baseball's pretty boring.
Well, and my brother-in-law, Adam, who actually may be listening to this episode, he is a huge sport fanatic, and I wouldn't quite call him a jock, but he's very much into physical activity and such. He's been listening to the podcast, and he just told me over Mother's Day that he'd like to sit in on a role-playing game. So,
whoa.
Yeah, so I think this barrier between sports and gaming is largely an artificial one. But here's what I want to talk about. Given the fact that I don't think it's an accurate stereotype, or at least not entirely accurate, why is it there?
I think it comes out of high school cliques.
Yes. I think it's a revenge thing.
Yeah.
You know, in high school, they made fun of me because I was a dork. Well, I'm going to make fun of them because they're a jock. I win.
I think it's a little less simplistic than that, but yeah.
I don't think it is.
I actually think it's about that simple. But Dan, I'm sorry, Mike, you're the therapist, so what do you think it is?
I'm a drunk therapist, so don't ask me right now.
This is why you don't get to drink.
This is the best time to ask you.
No.
But yeah, anyway, there's emo kids, there's nerds, there's band kids, and there's football kids. So what do the nerds do when they're in their 20s and 30s?
I have to agree. Hate football. I have to agree with you too. Mike thinks it's more complex, but won't tell us why he thinks it's more complex.
I'm inebriated. Ask me when I'm sober.
Oh, yeah,
the point of a podcast is to share opinions.
Hang up your hands.
And to get drunk.
I have to agree, though. I think it extends beyond high school, even, that there's kind of this pushback where you spend so much time listening to the jocks and sports people, even in your adult life.
Yeah, it's true, too.
Tell you that your hobby is stupid or nerdy or weird or crazy or cultic or whatever they want to tell you. And so there becomes kind of this pushback where you begin hating what they like simply because
they like it. Yeah.
Because they like it.
I think that's partially true.
That, you know, it's like, you get tired of seeing the shirtless guy with his entire body painted orange wearing a Viking helmet or whatever tell you that...
Maybe you do.
No, that guy's LARPing.
Yeah. And yes, I know orange is not the color of the Minnesota Vikings. But the point being that you hear these guys tell you that your hobby's crazy and so you start to shove back. But I just thought it was odd that, you know, despite that, that's really not true. What are some of the sports you guys like?
I'm into soccer. But I'm Hispanic. It's bred in me.
Volleyball, football, and baseball.
Hi-li.
Hi-li?
What the hell is hi-li? I am a huge hi-li or hi-li, depending. I believe the final A is typically around.
What is hi-li?
Sounds like Nom.
Have you seen the movie Tron?
Yes.
Yes, long ago.
Okay. You know, and this is, it's not the same game, but it's close. The game that they're playing in
there. You're telling me Tron is real?
Tron's game,
absolutely
like.
Real.
Oh my god, continue.
You know the game in Tron where the two guys are standing there on the circles and they have like the baskets on their hands? Yeah, it's kind of like that. In fact, that's what the baskets on the hand, that's what that comes from is Hi-Li.
So it's kind of like the new Quidditch teams that have resulted from the Harry Potter games. This game has come about from Tron.
No. Quidditch teams? This game greatly predates Tron.
You have to fly to play Quidditch.
No, yeah. There are Quidditch teams. I work with children. I assure you, there are Quidditch teams.
Are there Quidditch teams in the same way that there are battle mech lances like we play in? Because we don't have mechs.
No, well, they run around and play.
But let me complete this thought, but hang on. Mike has just dropped a great big bomb here. The concluding thought is no, Tron stole from Hi-Li, not the other way around. Hi-Li goes back quite a ways. How the hell do you play Quidditch?
I can't tell you. I don't
know. You need to read more Harry Potter.
How
books.
Do you have a snitch?
No,
that flies?
I know. I understand. I understand in Harry Potter how you play Quidditch, just like I understand in Battletech how you fight.
That wasn't a rules question. Okay.
Just like I understand in Battletech how you make 100 ton robots fight. But here's the thing.
I know where you're going.
I'm not a lieutenant of any battle mech lances.
Yes.
I wish you were.
I don't. Well, all right. Let's start off here. Mike is a therapist, so people are telling him they're on Quidditch teams.
I've seen advertisements for Quidditch teams, and people are sending me.
So this is not like when people tell you they're Moses or Jesus. No.
This is like I'm getting literature on Quidditch teams
Moses
to send my kids
Jesus.
To.
So how do you play Quidditch?
I've not been to a game. I've not read the rules. I have no idea. All I know is I'm getting literature for Quidditch teams to send my kids to.
Well, there's two bludgers. There's
what
a
kind
seeker.
Of literature? Is this professionally printed literature?
Yeah, like pamphlets for local sports.
Okay, so it seems to me that the problem is not just in children. There's some sort of industry that is supporting this.
Well, that's true. There are adults who are managing the teams and coming up with the ideas.
Let me get this straight. You've had people come into the thing that you do, okay, your office or your practice or whatever you want to call it, and tell you they play Quidditch.
Yeah.
And you have never asked the follow-up question of, you don't have brooms, or you have brooms probably. You don't have flying brooms.
What's the question?
You don't
have a Nimbus 9000.
You don't have flying balls. Well, how you've never followed this up with the question of how do you play Quidditch?
Well, it's a matter of priorities. I play Quidditch and I want to kill my brother and I chase him around the table with a knife yesterday.
But yeah. I understand the latter part. Murder makes sense.
Yeah, everyone stabs people. Murder is rational.
Murder to prioritize.
If tonight the wind just struck me right and I decided to murder, I know how I would do it. But if tomorrow morning the mood hits me to play Quidditch, I wouldn't know where to begin.
Couldn't tell you.
You need to work on that.
You're not very good as a therapist.
I can work on that.
You follow up on the sane stuff and don't ask about the crazies. I mean, who hasn't wanted to kill somebody?
Yeah, I've never gone to a therapist because I was sad.
Murder makes sense. I mean, man. Failure. All right.
Okay.
We've hit a brick wall here, so we're going to roll into the next subject. Balance in your game. This we're moving on to role-playing games here. Not Mike's
what
failures as a therapist. Balance in your role-playing game versus the universe itself.
The classic example being
Star Wars.
Should a Jedi character kick everyone's butt because that's what Jedi do?
Right.
According to Lucas.
Universe?
Are we taking this from a gameplay standpoint?
We are.
Or are we
all right,
taking
well, let's
this from
define
a...
the question. Let's define the question.
Well, it gets complicated.
For the folks at home that weren't with us when we were eating Mexican, the question here is that, and John kind of started to phrase it pretty well before he was so rudely cut off by Adam. Which is, if you
that's
look...
That's what we do on Fear the Booth.
If you look at the setting for a universe, the character concepts, archetypes, classes, whatever you might talk about, or even individual characters within a universe are not always balanced for fair play.
In fact, they rarely are. I mean, who could pick up Aragorn and pick up Pippin and say that have a great RPG party out.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Or Merlin, I mean, honestly, okay, Lancelot was a good swordsman and all, but...
He commanded the earth and the skies.
Right. And the other example being, well, the debate we were having at Mexican was...
At Mexican,
yeah. That doesn't even have a name. It's just a category.
Should a grizzled blaster fighter be able to stand up against an experienced Guardian?
If
you watched the movie, you'd say hell no. If you looked in the RPG book...
Did you see the end of movie 3?
Yeah, I did.
When all the Jedi were shot in the back?
Well, exactly.
By stormtroopers? Entire battalions complete with artillery and air support versus one Jedi? Yeah.
Well, let me completely put on my nerd glasses here, but... Shot in the back, if we're going to put this even in D20 terms, you're talking about a bunch of guys nailed you flat-footed. This is a little different than, let's take the fight between, say, Obi-Wan and Jango Fett.
Yeah, we're also talking about episodes 1, 2, and 3 versus 4, 5,
well,
and 6.
Well, I realize that.
Huge barrier.
But here's the point. Okay, fine. Han versus Vader in Empire Strikes Back.
No contest.
Back.
Which
Vader's
was
got
a half a second.
Right.
Blam, blam, I have your gun. We would be honored if you would join us.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So here's the question.
Han shot first.
When you go to play the RPG, and this was... They fixed this, and I say fixed, you already know how I come down on this. They fixed this in the D20 Star Wars, but in the West End Game Star Wars, you still kind of had that, where somebody played a Jedi. They were, maybe not head and shoulders, but they were noticeably more powerful than the people in the party who were just the bounty hunters or the blaster
toters.
And that
was truer to form for the Star Wars
Absolutely.
Universe.
Right.
Yes.
So here's the question. Should it be that way?
Yes.
I say no.
I say yes.
I say yes and no.
My God. It's 3-2 and there's only 4 people.
You can't pick 2?
I'm picking both.
You can't pick 2.
All right.
There's only 2 options.
I'm picking 2.
All right. Adam and John, Mike's just reduced himself to nonsense.
Oh, shut up.
Quidditch makes more sense than murder, and now yes and no. So, Adam and John, why yes?
Well, Adam, I've been expositioning for minutes
come on.
Now. Go ahead.
I hate when you ask me questions. Why yes? Because that's the whole feel of the game.
That's
the
right.
whole thing about the game is the Jedi are Billy Badasses, okay? They have a fewer number. The downside of this is that everybody's going to want to play a Jedi.
Yeah.
That's all right. Right. So your basic stance is that the purity of the setting
yes,
should ultimately
that was
trump.
Exactly what my argument was going to be.
You're not playing in the same universe if you're not playing with the powerful Jedi.
Yeah, precisely.
There is no point in being a Jedi if you can just pick up a blaster rifle and be as good.
Okay. Here is my retort to that. I would generally agree with you if it was not for the fact of how this actually plays out.
Right.
The ideal is that we're going to say in the universe the Jedi are more powerful. It's the way it's supposed to be, but they're also rare. So in the party, you've got one Jedi or maybe no Jedi.
Or maybe all Jedi.
All Jedi.
Yeah, exactly. And what happens instead is everyone fights over who's going to get to play the Jedi, because when it comes down to every situation in the game, they're going to dominate. Case in point,
yes.
In almost every Star Wars game we played in the Western system, Mike, not always, but typically played a Jedi.
You mean in the two campaigns I played with you? Yes. In the six or seven campaigns I've played total? No.
But
I submit that you can get around that using
yes,
game
you can.
Balance. Look
yes,
at Knights can. Of the Old Republic. You got to a computer terminal or a broken droid. What use was your Jedi character? None.
Well,
you needed someone who knew how to wire crap together.
In the West End game system, with the D6 system, I played an Imperial Royal Guard and could fight Jedis with my Force...
pike.
You had a Vibro scythe, didn't you?
I had a Force pike.
Okay.
And with my Force pike, I could fight Jedi, right. And I had a fighting chance.
Well, let me say this. I am not a believer that games should be centered around combat balance. Okay, that's one that I do not espouse in any way, shape, or form. That I believe that, quite frankly, there's a major mistake that's been made in role-playing games in general, which I talked about in the Ryan Dancy interview, that I think they have pushed themselves to think too much about the dungeon crawl and the monster killing instead of the other aspects of role-playing.
I can't disagree
so
with that.
So I will submit that I don't have a problem with characters being balanced qualitatively instead of quantitatively, that maybe this guy has more hit points and bigger guns and more armor, but this guy next to him has all kinds of out of combat strings he can pull and people he can manipulate. And
perhaps he owns a light Carillion YT-1300 freighter.
Right. Exactly.
Exactly. That can balance it out. But having said that, I think if you take it to that point where you're now talking about you are including qualitative balance in addition to quantitative balance, I absolutely think things should be balanced, because even if you want to talk about from a high horse superiority of the universe, which I can't, at least in theory, disagree with, in practice, what it comes down to is everyone's going to fight over that one character class.
Yes.
And at least some percentage of the people at your table are going to feel shafted because they're not playing that.
Or you could take an all or none approach. You could be a Jedi death squad from the Old Republic era and no one's lost because you're all Jedi. Or you could be an Empire squad from the Rebellion era.
Yeah.
And no one's lost because you're all non-Jedi.
Favorite character I've ever played, and I've said this many times on this podcast before, was a Jedi hunter in the D20 Star Wars. One of the reasons I liked that character and liked the system was, as much as I hated episodes 1, 2, and 3 of Star Wars, there was this great scene in, I think it was the second movie, where you have that fight between Obi-Wan and Jango Fett on the water world. And there's this great fight where a guy with just his wits, a gun, and a few gadgets is taking on and holding his own against the guy who has all these mega powerful
magic
force powers.
Sword and the mind ability.
Do not talk about my Obi-Wan like that.
I will.
I did that with the bounty hunter in a Star Wars campaign, and I had great fun with it. It was great.
Right, but the problem D6 is
even.
Let's take the D20 versus D6 thing out of the picture. If you wrote the game to perfectly reflect the basic truth claims of the Star Wars universe, that fight could really never happen. That if you take a look at what a guy with a gun should be capable of versus a guy with a force, Han versus Vader and Empire Strikes Back, this fight should never have happened.
That fight was theatric in
nature. I enjoyed playing a character who, yes, I had to be resourceful, had to use my wits, because the Jedi did have a leg up on me. But when it came down to the dice, it's not like I'm rolling D4s against his D30s. I mean, there was still, I had some fair prayer against
it. It's Batman versus Superman.
You're not comparing apples to apples either, though. I mean,
blind Vader's and reasonless
Darth
power.
Lord. I mean, a Sith Lord.
Well, right, and what's Han? Well, I mean, he's like a level...
Han is the super smuggler.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
He's a level 15 scoundrel.
Exactly,
least.
Yeah. I think that is an apples-to-apples comparison, because, yes, Vader is this mega-powerful cyborg Darth Sith Lord.
If you could achieve
Han
a god character...
But Han is also the scoundrel
in
smuggler
Star Wars
character.
Universe yeah, without
I think
the
if
Force,
you were gonna look
it's
at
Han Solo.
Yeah, I think if
perhaps
you were going to look at Boba Fett. That Han Solo is the greatest human in the Star Wars. I mean, because nothing ever goes wrong for him. And he's got a Wookiee.
Except for trying to go to hyperspace.
I wish I had a Wookiee.
He's in the middle hour of Empire Strikes Back.
He's got a retainer.
Yeah, he does.
He has a life debt.
All right, let's put that aside. I think we've taken that as far as we can take it. And let's talk about electronic aids or electronic elements in your RPG.
Dildonics?
First, tell me what exactly you mean.
No, you don't get electronic aids if you keep it to dildonics.
I don't know whether I have to bleep that or not.
No,
so we'll
don't.
Leave it in.
Excellent.
And if someone complains, then we'll take it out.
No one will.
What do you mean by electronic aids?
You take it out. All right, here's what I mean by electronic aids. We are moving, obviously, deeper and deeper into the digital age, where more and more the things that we used to do, even as recently as 5 or 10 years ago, with pen and paper and real-life interactions, are now happening more and more through electronic media.
According to Sim Earth, we hit the information age in 2000, and damn it, I believe it.
So,
okay,
for example, you can look at what email has done to letter writing. You can look at what texting and instant messengers have done to people physically getting together and hanging
and
out.
Spelling.
Yes.
No.
Don't get me started on that one.
Chad's not here.
Yeah. Well, I want to do a whole bonus episode on the death of the English language.
So do I.
So, but we'll come back to that later. So here is the question. As we move into the information age, one of the things that we as role players seem to collectively fear most is the impact that electronics will have on our hobby. Because gaming is pencil usually, paper, physical books. I mean, even PDFs now are causing something of a controversy. Dice, real people sitting around a real table playing this game, which we hope goes deeper than anything Diablo or WoW can give you.
Dude, I never even thought about gaming over Skype, but I guess you could.
Oh, please. Are you just kidding?
We've had the gaming over the internet episode.
We've actually had two of them.
Yes, one was an interview.
I have to try it sometime.
Okay, well.
We can keep that.
Well, Mike catches up with the rest of the audience.
And the year 1998.
Oh, shut up.
How can you know less about the show than people who just listen to it? You're here. Regularly.
Wait, because what's that other group do?
What other group?
How can Mike know less about the show than people who...
okay.
That's your big difference right there.
You know, my mom probably knows more about the show than you do.
My brother-in-law, who has never played a single RPG in his life, knows more about the show than Mike.
My mom called me the other day. She's like, what's Worldwide Wing Night? And can I go to it?
I know what Worldwide Wing Night is. I've been to the first one. I'm going to the second one. Thank you.
Dude,
very
her
much.
Surgeon Robin coming?
Yes. That's awesome.
Yeah, your mom actually responded to my rant on Woodson Terrace 2 episodes ago.
I responded to it too, just in a different
way. Okay, role playing game.
Okay, yes. So getting back to this. So here's the point that we as role players seem to fear the presence of electronic things, typically because when you mention electronic things pushing into our frontier, usually the image this conjures up is this apocalyptic vision of how WoW and other MMOs,
Conan,
and all the Xbox 360 and whatever are going to be
Pong,
the death of our hobby.
I think John's comment there was exactly how I feel about this.
Which is what Ryan Dancy said
Pong
would happen, and he may be right.
Pong is going to kill gaming.
Well,
I bet they said it.
Take my girlfriend as example. She used to play role-playing games tabletop, but since the advent of MMOs, she won't play them because the fact is she doesn't have to work. She doesn't have to imagine things she can see on screen.
Dancy made this exact point, and I think it's a very good one.
I think it's a good one, too. But
the MMOs aren't considered as good quality as good tabletop, but they're more accessible, and people think they're good.
It's the mass market of role-playing.
It's not enough for me, but it is for her, and she won't play tabletop now.
This is one of the big reasons why, in the Ryan Dancy interview, one of the things that I tried to kind of push him on was, look, that being the case, if you look at the advertising for RPGs, if you look at the foot they put forward, it's the kill more monsters, get better loot, which quite frankly, Diablo and WoW and EQ2 and all these other games do better, faster, stronger, more visually, more prettily, et cetera, than what D&D can ever do, which is why I think what we need to stress in role-playing games is the things that video games don't do.
Plot, flexibility,
characters. Plot, role-playing, flexibility. But
Mountain Dew.
But Cheetos, pissing off your wife, et cetera, et cetera.
Immersion.
But that's not what I want to talk about.
I don't want to immerse myself in Wait, yes, I do. Continue. Yes.
So here is the question that I'm getting at. Does the push of the electronic elements into role-playing have to be this all-or-nothing thing? Okay. No. Now, we've talked about in previous episodes about PDFs versus print books and the virtues of each of those and why we like or dislike each one, and in truth probably have mixed opinions about them. I won't rehash that. We talked about in one episode a while back about the use of electronics as a distraction. Is a laptop or a PDA or something like that helpful or hurtful to a role-playing game? Don't want to rehash that. But when we were developing Skies of Glass, and I say we still are developing Skies of Glass, we hope to have something demo by Gen Con.
We will. More
on that later. But as we talk about Skies of Glass, one of the things that we asked ourselves is, was there a way that we could introduce electronic elements into the role-playing game that would provide all of the convenience and the attraction and all the sorts of stuff that the information age has given in instant messaging and MMOs and whatever, without selling out the core of a role-playing game?
I think you lose some for sure.
Yes, I think that what they did with Mega Mech and Battletech was a great start, where they automate all the map combat. I think it's a great start if you adapt it for a GM module.
I agree. No. This is perfect. And let me stress also, one thing we're not talking about here is we're not talking about just remote play, because if you want to like play by post or play via Skype or something like that, I have nothing against that. Friend of the show does the Groovy Gamers podcast on this subject. I have nothing against that, but that's not what we're talking about.
Electronic aids to the game.
Right. No, we're talking about electronic aids to the game. Not electronic mediums. Right. Not electronic mediums.
You've talked about running a Battletech game where we play Mega Mech, and I won't do it. What? That's the whole reason, is because of Mega Mech. I don't want to play a game where I'm doing Mega Mech. I want the maps. I want my miniatures. I want my freaking dice. I don't want Mega Mech.
Have you ever played Mega Mech?
No.
Okay.
And I'm not interested in playing Mega Mech.
I don't like peanut butter because I
Chad's not
it.
Absent from the episode.
In most ways, Chad and
I don't. Well, I understand what your position is where you like the experience of the maps and the dice and stuff.
That's right.
It's just that it takes so long to do after hour three.
But that's the fun of the game.
After hour three, four guys at the table are no longer paying attention.
Well, here's the way that I don't want to become, all right? Now, and there's a danger in this because you can create an image that may not be that may not even be accurate and spend so much time running from it that you're just running from your own shadow. But what I don't want to become is the old curmudgeon-y man bitching about the death of letter writing in the age of email, where all of my bitching and all of my screaming and all the letters I write is not going to stop the tides of reality.
But I don't care what's popular and what people like. I care about what I like and what's fun.
Then you're the old curmudgeon-y man. Not really.
But popularity be damned. I mean, if you like something, you like it.
It's not a popularity issue for me at all. It's a practicality.
Yes.
Okay. Check this out. You run a game for 4 hours, and in that 4 hours, you can have the span of an entire month's worth of Battletech. Okay, you run map combat one night, 4 hours, 10 rounds of combat, you have just played 10 minutes of the game.
I will say
that. Absolutely true. However, the other four nights we're playing Mech Warrior and we're doing role playing, and that game of going to miniatures on the map is actually the part of Battletech that I probably enjoy the most.
Going to minis on a map in a regular RPG game is amazing.
Okay. Real quick, for the folks at home who aren't familiar with Mega Mech, for the game Battletech, there is a
program that automates the
map. It's a free program that automates the map combat for you. Well, it was great because, quite frankly, as the game master who normally has to haul around a bag that literally weighs between 50 and 75 pounds with
and worry
books
if your maps get destroyed
and maps and counters
and all that stuff you can't get anymore.
Yeah, and the jackass who
does all breakable, soakable, and burnable and losable.
And now all of a sudden all we had to do was bring a laptop or two or three laptops, and this combat was not only quick but it was portable.
Boo.
I see a virtue in it.
Boo.
Now, here's what I'm getting at though.
Boo.
I'm not telling you what to like or dislike. if someone writes into the show and says, look, I still prefer my dice and my paper and all the things the way they are, I don't disagree with you. All I'm talking about
aids,
right? Aids to role playing game. And I am talking about, are there things that we as role players, some of us being players, some of us being role playing game creators, can do to keep role playing relevant by giving it an electronic dimension where we take the conveniences of the electronic age and bring them into role playing?
Like the MMOs automating combat? Oh, I long for that.
When the technology reaches that point, I will be all about it. When we can go into a VR world created by Dan, where the Danverse universe is there in our VR world, oh, I will be all about the technology.
What if we could sit around a VR table and play a game in VR?
But until VR, give me my dice.
And VR freedoms.
But here's the thing. Let's take it even a half step. With Skies of Glass, we talked about how, among the other things that we were going to do, we wanted to add a lot of non-combat elements to the game.
Yes.
Okay, for example, like, let's say you would have the ability to manage a business of some kind. Like, let's say that you own a boat and you have a big fishing operation. And as we were looking at this, we came up with some ways that we could make some really neat mini games out of this that use dice or cards. Or
now, doing mini games online or with technology, like if you want to make a business manager on the computer, this is fine.
Why did you not understand this topic until just now?
No, because there's a huge difference. Taking major aspects of the game, like battle mech fighting, to the computer, I don't like.
Okay.
Taking a smaller aspect of the game, like managing your business, to the game, to the computer, I don't mind.
A newer thing that you now can do because of these electronic aids, not an electronic aid taking the role of something that you were already doing before,
right,
is what you like.
Right.
I can get on board with that. I don't have the ire you have for the electronic aids. I'd rather run a Battletech game on a computer model.
Well, and things like running my business, if I'm playing in a group of players, let's say the four of us are playing in a game, if I'm running my business, you three are sitting there and you're bored out of your mind.
Yeah.
And if I could do this on the computer between games, wonderful.
Well, it depends how
combat involves all four of us.
We want to get. I mean, if you want to actually have a one-on-one GM with player, the player is making serious business decisions and rolling for a ton of individual variables. Yeah, put it in a computer, do it on your own time. Most people, I think, though, just roll a d20 for how well the business is done this month.
But I think the mini game could be fun.
I think it could too.
It would also give you something to get enmeshed in between sessions,
absolutely,
to keep you interested in the game.
Let me ask this question a little bit of a different way. MMOs and Diablos, we've said many times, appeal to the dungeon crawl aspect of role-playing games. And they are pulling players away, period. Okay, it is happening. This is not it shouldn't or da-da-da-da-da, we'd rather. It is happening,
yes,
period.
Yes.
What I am suggesting is, why not make an electronic spin of role-playing games that handles what electronic things handle well? Combat, management, tracking, character sheets, automation of the menial tasks, while without doing what MMOs and Diablo do of taking away the role-playing. Where, and this is kind of like the Mega Mech thing.
I would play a cyborg game like that, where you have the computer, the game that actually manages all that menial crap that I don't care about, and
right,
the GM story, and the GM has the control enough
and,
to
and this
to
could
reach
be partially online or entirely online, because I think, quite frankly, if you made an application that was geared specifically to one game rather than just a generic role-playing desktop,
this is where I jump
off. You would have Neverwinter Nights.
Maybe, yeah, but it's...
This is where I jump off, because Neverwinter Nights wasn't flexible enough.
No, it sucked.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. You'd have more of like a role-playing desktop, but like where you have just like dice and a table, but it's geared to one game. And you could say, because it's geared to one game, you can have really specific tools. Like, for example, we're playing Skies of Glass. We are now going to go into a Skies of Glass combat. I can set up, there's three or four enemies and you guys, and you've got these weapons, these armors.
And here's a map.
And people can declare their actions. Yeah, you can make a real simple square or hex map. People declare their actions. And then we come out of the turn and, okay, we're going to do town management or whatever the mini game is. But then between that, you still have some forum, whether that's doing this remotely or whether that's turning away from the computer and facing each other around a table and now actually role-playing the scenes that come between.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about with the cyborg games, where it's half human and then half machine.
It's a good idea.
And I have to admit that even as I sit here and talk about this,
I want it.
This is a very, I have to admit, this is an idea that is the beginning of an idea, yes, not the end of an idea. Yeah. And I'm hoping that as I throw this out there to the community as a whole, that as I think about this and other people will think about this and maybe even refine this idea further than I have, and maybe somewhere in here we can come up with something that attracts these newer electronically minded MMO type players without selling out what makes a role-playing game a role-playing game.
I don't think the technology's there. I mean, because we can sit here and role-play.
Hold on.
Okay, we can sit here and role-play. We can LARP, whatever. And then, oh, let's go to the computers and work out our combat. Then we go back to our role-playing or our LARPing or whatever. To me, taking that to the computers almost takes you out of character, damages the game.
I don't think the technology is that far away, because if you look at, I mean, for years...
We need a map table with holograms.
For years, Bill Gates has been talking about how, and I use him as one example, other people as well, about how our lives are eventually going to become almost a single device life.
Yes.
Where you're going to hit this point where you can carry one handheld device that does the vast majority of things that all the other things in your life do.
And I can't wait.
And quite frankly, if you look at what some of these PDAs do, we're damn near there anyway.
I want to try quarter.
So, I mean, don't think of it in the context of today, where, yeah, we have to get up and go downstairs and sit around a desktop. But imagine if you had some kind
but
of
I
like...
But I don't see technology advancing in the appropriate ways. We still are using headphones and speakers and monitors. We're not advancing
Two words for you. Tablet PC.
I tell you what.
Nanomachines.
Four computers in the room. Okay. Four computers in the room.
That was a joke.
Mid-grade computers. I can tell you how this game could play out. It doesn't have to be that intense. I mean, it doesn't have to be graphically taxing. It doesn't have to be the next... Half-Life 3.
Well, see, just imagine if instead of...
Do you have the first Half-Life 3?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Imagine if instead of a book and character sheets that you've got some kind of like a tablet PC, okay? And we are sitting around role-playing, and when it comes time to do combat, we're on some kind of a local network, you know, a LAN or whatever between these four tablet PCs, and instead of me setting out figs, that you look down at your tablet PC and there's the combat map with your dude on it.
Age of Wonders.
And there's a tab for your character sheet, and there's a tab for your fishing business
or
whatever.
They did this in the Wing Commander game. And it was awesome.
And
okay,
the beauty of this then is also, because of the way this is set up, I mean, if you're still using TCP/IP or whatever the case may be several years from now, you wouldn't even have to be in the same room.
Yeah.
That you could be sitting there in class, and instead of texting each other and this horrific abomination against the English language, that you guys are role-playing in a horrific abomination against the English language.
I'm sitting in History 101.
What I'm ultimately saying is you're talking about things that automate processes.
Yes.
And to me, automation is not good. To me, automating combat is not good.
Oh, I hate the tedium of combat.
Let me ask you a question, and maybe we'll cover some new ground here. Is there a reason specifically that you do not want to see this made electronic other than nostalgia?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, I'm listening. What is that?
Because, for example, if we're playing D&D,
okay,
and I say I'm going to attack, you know, or I'm going to swing my sword or whatever,
okay,
there is usually something going on in your head that you're envisioning your character swinging his sword, whatever. If I automate combat, we've gotten rid of that. Take BattleTech.
Instead of rolling a d20, you click a button that says roll d20, and it tells you hit or you miss versus the d20 telling you, I don't understand how that takes anything out of your head.
Well, okay, and I've not used Mega Mech, so that's where this all breaks apart.
No, it doesn't need to be Mega Mech.
Forget Mega Mech.
Yeah, forget Mega Mech.
We're not talking an MMO. We're not talking like a... It doesn't even have to be like some 3D world.
Yeah, think Age of Wonders. I mean, just straight up, you're looking at your character sheet, the DM's like, roll me a d20. If you fail this roll, you are taking 6 points of damage.
In Age of Wonders,
you've played Knights of the Old Republic. All it is a dice roller that takes into account every variable on the attacker and the attackee.
And if that's all
it is? Is that what we're talking about?
If that's all it is, then I can handle it.
No, it's more than that, and it's more than what you're saying, John, and less than what you're saying.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's somewhere between the two. That we're talking something that's a little bit more than just an automated dice roller, but it's not like...
It's a character management system.
Yeah. It's not as if that somehow when you go to attack, it's going to show you that attack.
Yeah, it's not like you're going to build your video.
It just tells you that, like, you rolled a D, you know, here it shows you a map, here's where your guy's standing, and instead of throwing a physical D20 at the table, you click roll attack, and it tells you rolled this, here's your modifiers, you hit or miss.
You're standing there, you have a sword, there's a guy next to you.
Okay, but
it'll automatically do the modifiers for you, and
had the time, I could write this application right now. The technology exists.
Then why haven't more people done it?
That's the question we're asking.
Yeah, that was the entire point of this discussion.
So what's your answer?
Our answer is they wrote World of Warcraft instead. Yeah.
No, no. But from what you're saying, this is a good idea. This is viable with modern technology. And what I'm saying is, I don't think it is. If it was, why
isn't
it out?
Because the role-playing game market isn't as large as the computer game market.
Because I think, here's what I'm saying, because I think there is an emotional, just like we were talking about with sports, there's this artificial, unreal, non-existent wall between sports and role-playing. And I think the same thing is true here. That there is this artificial, imagined, largely emotional wall between physical role-playing games and computer games. Now, I completely agree. There is a world of difference between a D&D game and a Diablo game, or a D&D game and a game of World of Warcraft. But I do not think that there needs to be a world of difference between the tabletop game and an electronic role-playing, R-O-L-E, role-playing game, even if the people are sitting in the same room.
I completely agree. And the reason they haven't done it, okay, computer games hit, EQ comes out, EQ is huge, makes a crap load of money, and RPGs start bleeding people.
You know, and you say, why has this been done? I could ask the same question of why wasn't Magic done 1 year before it was done?
Yeah.
I mean, ideas have to start somewhere, and I kind of what I'm saying is
But you're talking about a technology level that's been there for a decade and nobody's moved on it.
Well,
how long could we have printed cards and played Magic?
Yeah, exactly. How long have cards been printable, and yet nobody did Magic until the 1990s? And it's the same thing.
You're saying it's never occurred to anyone?
Maybe it's never been executed.
I don't know why they're
I'll say that. Okay. It's never been executed. People have taken steps in that direction.
Yeah, Mega Mech is a step in that direction.
Mega Mech, WebRPG. People have taken steps in these directions, but I don't think anyone has taken it the next step because, like I said, people seem to hit this thing where, oh, gee, that's too much like a video game. That destroys RPGs, and they don't allow themselves to think that there's a middle step between the pure tabletop role-playing game with Cheetos and Mountain Dew and dice and papers that have soda stains on them and World of Warcraft. That there is a step somewhere between
there's a
the
stigma
two.
There. I mean, did you use the automatic character generator from D&D 3.0? CD that came with the back of your book?
No.
Why not? It did everything for you. It automated. It printed out on a nice sheet. You couldn't possibly have screwed it up.
Because I have a PDF of character sheets and I just
But you can't write on it. Okay, all right. You can edit them, but why not use the generator? It's right there. It even automates. It's even specifically tied to the rules.
Haven't tried it.
Why?
I don't know.
Well, see, that's where we're coming from here. Nobody's tried it.
And I'm rigid in my old thinking. Is
no, that's
saying?
What I'm saying. I'm just saying we haven't gone the direction.
I would not be swearing just to tell you what you're thinking, but what I would say is that is now being someone on a podcast with a pretty good listenership who gets a lot of feedback, I do see a lot of that. I mean, is that your issue? I don't know. You tell me. But I will say I see a lot of that where the issue that hits here is one of two things. It's either a nostalgia for the way it's always been, or it's a fear that
you're going to lose what you have.
That the introduction of the electronic medium spells the end of role-playing games.
Which is the death knell that we hear from everybody. And I got bad news for you people. It's not going anywhere.
Well, and if you want it to die, the worst thing you can do is fail to adapt. Now, there's a difference between adapting and selling out.
Yes.
There's a big difference between the two, and I hope people at home can understand that difference. I'm not suggesting selling out. I'm not suggesting turning role-playing games into WoW. Never. I mean, if you've heard any episodes of the show before this one, you know that. I'm just suggesting that I think there is a middle ground where you can give the electronic, you can give the Gen Ys and the whatevers the things they want out of life, and still give them the kind of role-playing game experience that we have come to love and cherish.
Yes. I'm on board with this product.
Okay. My end result conversation here is show me, don't tell me. Show me an electronic aid, and we'll see if it's as good as you guys say. Let's see if it adds to the game or it takes away from the game.
Well, sadly, the two people on this podcast who can actually program this thing are also working on a crap ton of other projects.
Exactly.
Okay, then let's put it out to the listeners.
To use Chad's favorite adjective, we're hella busy right now.
We are hella busy.
We are hella busy.
All right, well, here's the final line that I'm going to leave this on. This is obviously an idea that even we as hosts have not fully formulated.
I just did. Or began to.
It's something Adam and I have kicked around a little bit. I am really curious what you guys at home think about this, and I want to put out a challenge that to those of you that develop role-playing games, whether it's professionally, semi-professionally, or pure just a hobby for the friends that come over and wreck your basement, I want to put a challenge out to you guys. Think about this and see what you can come up with, see what you think about this, and just roll this around and see where it goes. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to see your discussions on the
forum. And
if you
make an app, send it to Mike at Fear the Boot. Mike wants to see it.
So, all right, we will catch you guys next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2007, fully owned by its host. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in the show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to FearTheBoot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at FearTheBoot.com.